Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. It has been one amazing week in America, from the freedom for all to marry to the ongoing debate over the symbol that is all about not being free. Here with us in Studio 3 to take on these and other moral struggles are Reverend Emmett Price. He's a professor of music at Northeastern University, and Reverend Irene Monroe. She would be a syndicated religion columnist. Good to see you both.
Thanks for having us back.
Glad to be here. I'm settling down from celebrating.
Yeah, I know. Bet you
it's
are.
It's been absolutely a wonderful week. You know, we talked with you, actually, Irene, because you wrote about this in the Globe, talking about the discussion on race that we never seem to have. Well, we have been having one, I think, this week. I mean, between the Confederate flag, Obama's going to South Carolina, standing up and singing Amazing Grace, we have been talking about it, at least for a few days.
Well, not directly, you know, and as if anything, we've been voyeurs of it. It's been a very voyeuristic kind of conversation about race. But absolutely, race has been the topic, most definitely.
But I think people are talking about it in their own homes. I think at least in my White House, people have been talking about it. And I think that it's a conversation that you don't have that much with your relatives because everybody's selfish in their own lives.
But I think also when we talk about the Confederate flag, I think that we all can begin to have that conversation, whether we're on opposite sides of it or not. So I think that does it. And I think what also does it is that when we look at particularly Obama's eulogy on Friday, we're talking about, in a sense, innocent, harmless people who were just killed for a senseless act because this guy wants to start a race war. So one of the things I do get this, I don't think even most white people, even if they're against black people, I don't think they want a race war. I think that they want to keep their heritage and want us to whitewash it to not mean, you know, a racial supremacy, which it is. But I don't think anyone wants to revive the Civil War.
Incidentally, I've been having a discussion about race. It's been at Starbucks all weekend. Now, getting back to, I saw Barack Obama, maybe because he won the Affordable Care Act on Thursday and then gay marriage on Friday. Right. It was one of my analysis of that eulogy, which both the singing and the words were just so beautiful, was, hey, listen, I'm having the week of my life. I am gone for it. Here's Barack Obama. Obviously, at Reverend Pinckney's funeral last Friday, he's talking about why removing the Confederate flag, the thing that Marjorie and Irene are talking about, is only the start of a larger conversation about race.
By taking down that flag, we express God's grace. But I don't think God wants us to stop there. For too long, we've been blind to the way past injustices continue to shape the present. Perhaps we see that now. Perhaps this tragedy causes us to ask some tough questions about how we can permit so many of our children to languish in poverty, or attend dilapidated schools, or grow up without prospects for a job or for career.
You know, I don't know if this is fair, Emmett. My sense is that high-profile black politicians, Deval Patrick, Barack Obama, while it's clear how deep their feelings are about race issues in America, they're really careful. I mean, for, yes, I think, fairly obvious reasons. Yes. I don't have to restate them. This, other than the moment with Obama where he said, and he got heat for this, Trayvon Martin could have been my son, that sort of thing, Friday, to me, really was right at the core, at least in my estimation, of how he feels about all this. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think it's great. It's a great statement, Jim, and I think it is fair. I think on Friday, Obama finally let his hair down, yeah, right? And he became, as we've been joking all weekend, Reverend President Obama. Yeah. His eulogy was masterfully crafted. It was brilliantly delivered. And I think that this will go down in history as one of his most powerful moments, right? Because of the force that was going through the entire week of all the, you know, cataclysmic announcements and things that he had been, you know, advocating for his entire, you know, presidency. The other thing that's important, too, is that we hadn't heard President Obama make a statement like this since he was a candidate,
talking
about race and really talking
Reverend
about
Wright
just,
in Philadelphia, the 45-minute
and
speech.
And he owes his preaching style, that homily. He really does. He owes that. It was a homily and a public Jeremiah. He owes that to Reverend Wright. And
well, I'm
then
sure
to
he'll
break
be saying that sometime
and,
soon.
And then to break out in song. And I mean, and he hit all the key points. He starts out with saying that the Bible is about hope and talked about not only God's grace, but the Confederate flag, gun violence, racism, and to end it on a song.
But let me just get back to you for one second, Emmett, before you get your two cents in here or more. I am usually as cynical as you when it comes to this national conversation on race thing. But I have to say, for example, I read this morning, you know, unlike highfalutin comments that candidates make, Jeb Bush is going to Charleston. You say, okay, so what? He's going to Charleston not for a public event. He's going for a private meeting with pastors.
That's right.
Now, maybe that's not the biggest thing in the world to me. It's a pretty significant deal. And again, I don't know if it's going to last more than another week or whatever, but there is a level of engagement.
I think there are two things operating. I think very much most people, really all of us, black or white or wherever we are on the spectrum, want some sort of healing around race. It would behoove him not only as a politician to do so, but he, you know, he's not as white as he used to be, largely because he's married to a woman of color. So these issues that we are talking about very much would impact his family. Now, Romney, you would think you can't be any white than Romney. But by adopting an African-American son, he's beginning to get a lens into what it is to have, you know, a person of color so close, you know, in his orbit and how that changes for him.
Yeah, I see. My sense also, Emmett, is this could be completely wishful thinking. I don't think Obama's given this one up. I don't think it was like there was a horrible, horrible thing that happened in that church. I'm going to give a speech from the heart, and then I'm going to move on to the next issue. My sense, who knows? My sense is he's engaged too. If he's engaged, and to use the word he used in that podcast, fearless about whatever he was, then we're almost forced into the conversation, I think.
The conversation is happening, and as a result of his eulogy, as a result of a number of other things, including Bree Newsom taking down
the flag.
I mean, this conversation is forced to happen, and I think President Obama is not going to be such a lame duck in his last year and a half, and I think he does have the courage and has the aptitude to actually move this conversation forward in a way where that it will influence the electoral process or the process for candidates for 2016 and 17.
He has nothing to lose and everything really to gain at this point. He's finally come out in so many ways. We've wanted this conversation about race. This particular incident that happened at the church allows a conversation in a way that many other incidents that have happened previously don't. I mean, this is where you clearly see people in Bible study. It's not a question of was this person guilty? Was the cops, you know, over-policing? It's not an either-or situation.
Well, you know
it
what you
so
add to that,
cut.
Irene? Most of us have never heard Pinckney speak. And I have to say, I have been transfixed.
Yeah,
every
great.
Single time they played a clip from this guy preaching or speaking at the South Carolina State House. I mean,
it was also
unbelievable.
It was also, I mean, I think a lot of people learned things they didn't know. I didn't know that there were these Confederate flags all over the place and state buildings down south, because people can only pay attention to so many things. And that's
well, they're flying off the shelves now down in southern.
Well, you know about
in
it
these
too.
Southern states.
And I also think that when the families of the people that were killed in church got up and looked at that video of this young man and said, "We forgive you," you know, that's very powerful. And you see that. You see that in Boston with African-American families who've lost family members. You don't see it much among white people, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But you do see it, and it kind of hits home. You look at people and you think, my God, look at what they've gone through. Look at their situations. A lot of these mothers that I've seen in Boston are poor single mothers.
That's right.
And they have the grace to get up and do that. It sort of makes you think, wait a minute. I mean, it reminds you of the scenes that you saw during the Civil Rights Movement when you saw people being nonviolent when they were just so put upon. It was great.
I mean, you find a couple of things. One, we all realize now that the level of white supremacy and hate groups are bigger than we thought, because on Saturday down in South Carolina, there was a rally for the Confederate flag,
right? And saying Southern Lives Matter.
Yeah.
You know, taking that slogan.
Yes. Well, I think we've established now there are other ways to remember your great-great-great-great-grandfather than having the flag.
But I
want
to say this, though. It's not fair to use this young man as the scapegoat in terms of, you know, white supremacy and racism. While he certainly is the catalyst for us to talk about racism, he's really the product of what has been going on and has been invisible, and we have refused to talk about in terms of race. It's easy now to say, oh, because I'm not like him. But he's blatant forms of racism. We're talking about when Obama speaks in his eulogy that, you know, that Jamal should have the same opportunity as Johnny should in terms of a job interview. So that's the implicit racism that Obama's talking about that most of us have to address. No one really.
Okay, we got to get into this conversation. We're talking to Emmett Price and Irene Monroe.
That's Emmett, one way to stop me.
Well, I'm sorry, but we get this actually, it's a two-way, not a one-way. The other major Friday development, obviously, there was a speech, it was the eulogy, which we all seem to agree upon. We don't know what the impact is going to be at that church. But in the morning, obviously, Supreme Court issued its decision 5-4 on gay marriage. Marjorie and I were talking this morning. There's still of the pockets of resistance, and there are some. I mean, some are based on bigotry, but some are based on their perception of religious freedom being impinged upon. Black churches are a mixed bag, and I think that's being kind. That is where things are, and it seems to me that part of it is there's this continuing notion that. There's no equivalency. The struggle for civil rights for blacks and the struggle for civil rights for gays and lesbians are two different animals, and many black leaders, including church leaders, resent that that notion. So how does that get addressed, if it does?
Sure, there's a couple of things here going on. One, there is this resentment for the fact that here's a movement that really started in the 1960s and has gotten to fruition here in 2015, whereas the kind of black freedom movement and the black equality movement is still an ongoing fight. So there is a resentment there in terms of the time duration that is taken for success there. There's also a resentment in terms of the theological construct of folks who believe that this is not biblical, right, and who want to exert that belief in a way that seems kind of argumentative, if you will, if not antagonistic. And so you'll find that, yes, the black church is not a homogenous or monolithic, understanding of
but it's homophobic for sure.
Well, not the whole black church.
And it makes the assumption. See, I have a problem with this kind of argument. It's very lopsided because it makes the assumptions that all the gays are white. And so here I am, like so many others, that sit at that very much intersection. And so clearly I might not feel the oppression of homophobia among whites, or I might not be able to discern whether it's negrophobia or homophobia coming from a white person. I certainly do when I sit in that black church feel the homophobia.
Some black churches, not
all
of them.
But you know,
and that's the point.
But you know what? You talk as if there's been some sort of, you know, tsunami of change here.
There are local black churches.
We're going to fight again. See, we're about to fight again.
Go ahead, fight. That's fine with us.
You know, because Emmett talks about his church of parishioners of 20 or 30 people.
I didn't mention my church. My church is not a black church. They have a black pastor, but it's not a black church.
But the point about it is that the foundation of it is a biblical foundation similar to what you will find in these white evangelical churches, because we are of an evangelical tradition. Most of the churches, and that Mason-Dixon line doesn't make a distinction. It doesn't matter if we're up south or down south. You will find it prevalent throughout black churches.
Okay. Reverend Emmett Price, this is what I've always interested in when people make these biblical arguments about gays, is that, you know, the same St. Paul that talks about you can't be a homosexual also says you should be nice to your slaves. Nobody thinks anybody should be nice to their slaves
anymore. St. Paul was a homosexual, by the way.
Well, I don't know.
And that was his thorn in his side because he was on the down low.
Okay.
I just want to say that for biblical clarification.
All right. Okay, so we don't talk about be nice to your slaves anymore. Then you have the Old Testament, Leviticus, talking about people getting stoned on Sunday. So I'm always interested in why we can eliminate the getting stoned on Sunday, eliminate the slave part, but not eliminate the homosexual part. You know what I mean?
Or the women part, too.
Yeah, but the women, well, yeah.
Yes, but, Emmett, what's the answer?
Well, let's ask him when he gets here, you know. I mean, I think the point that we're making is that some churches have a more liberal theology than others. And we can't cast a whole swan by saying that all black churches are steeped in conservatism.
Right.
There are some local black churches, right, across the nation.
And the denominational churches, too.
Who have moved along.
But here's my question, though. We've thrown out these other things. And not thrown out the gay thing.
It's called a hermeneutic of suspicion if you go to seminary.
Okay.
Meaning that it's like
Marjorie,
it's like
it
being
time.
The cafeteria.
It takes time.
No, it's like being cafeteria Catholics.
Marjorie,
we choose
takes time.
And pick.
Okay.
No, all how right. long? It's too long. It's been too long.
Yeah. Marjorie,
it is rooted
it takes time.
In the birth of the black church and
right.
black theology.
Okay. Thank you. Now, you're not done. No, you're not done. This is Pope Watch. You're not getting out of here.
Don't get me started, too.
Now, Irene, this one is directed at you.
All right.
In light of the fact that the Pope has now said that weapons manufacturers should not be calling themselves Christians, that's pretty radical notion for the old Pope over there, is it not?
This is
a week after climate change and whatever. So how do we grade him on that baby?
You know, I assumed in that that means he will stop the wars that are going on around the world.
Well, he has been
and
preaching
so
against them, hasn't he?
That's right, and he's putting it out there. So, you know, this is one time that I'm going to go beyond three and actually give him a 3.2.
All right. How about it, Emmett?
I think he misstepped.
You do?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you say?
How do you call somebody who's involved in certain business unchristian? Right? I mean, how do you even make that kind of swoop? And that's back to what you were getting at, Marjorie.
Yep.
I mean, how do you cast this notion that people who disagree with you are unchristian? Right? I don't think we can do that.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's a much bigger...
I don't think we can do that.
No, I you know what? I don't think that he's doing that. I really think that what he's trying to do is that we need to stop. We need to look at our day-to-day actions.
People who manufacture weapons or invest in weapons industries are hypocrites if they call themselves Christians. That's a quote.
It's an interesting point.
I agree with that.
Yeah, what about the just war theory? I guess you need some weapons for the just war, right? Isn't it?
Well, I would say that there's no war that is just.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he is standing theologically.
People who manufacture weapons. So here we go. The person who has a shotgun because they go hunting, right? Or the person who creates, for
that's
sport.
A good point. The hunters.
For skeet shooting, right? I mean, that's a weapon.
You're making a bigger point than just the hunters. You're saying that even if the weapons are for a war machine,
yeah. I mean, how do you decide
that they're, an interesting notion. Well, it's been a pleasure, to say the least.
Always exciting. Never a dull moment. Reverend Irene Monroe and Reverend Emmett Price, they join us every Monday, and the fireworks begin. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion column. She's also been writing a lot lately for the Boston Globe. Thank you very much, Emmett
and Irene, for coming in.
Coming up, Boston's Shira Springer is next. Shira Springer next. Apparently she is next. The script is correct. Coming up.
And here's the president, incidentally, singing.
Why don't you join in?
No, I mean, it wasn't his best singing, but I'll tell you.
I thought he sounded pretty good.
It was pretty beautiful.
Okay, anyway, up next, Boston's Shira Springer joins us for her take on Boston 2024. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.